Welcome everyone to a Baseball America podcast. I'm John Manuel here in Durham along with Mike Lanana. Joining us live from Houston, our own Ted Cahill, who's down at the Shriners Hospitals College Classic. Fez's galore in Houston, Teddy. Very evident on the MLB Network broadcast all weekend. A huge weekend of college baseball as the regular season went through its second weekend, and we have some changes in the college top 25. But Teddy, thought we would start with you and Mike just kind of chewing over what happened down in Texas. I guess all tournaments are supposed to be, everything's supposed to be bigger and better in Texas. That tournament wasn't bigger. They were bigger out in San Diego this weekend. It was the Tony Gwynn inaugural tournament down in San Diego. We'll talk about that a little bit later, but I'll tell you what was better in Texas this weekend, and that was TCU. They have a bigger freshman than everybody else in Luke and Baker, and maybe a better class of newcomers, because TCU has come out just fantastic. I'd say guns blazing, but they're Texas Christian, so we'll try to keep it on the Jesus tip. They were very, very good this weekend. Just looks like Jim Schlossnagel has reloaded, not rebuilt down in Dallas. I'm sorry, in Fort Worth.
Yeah, the Horned Frogs, they looked really good. They won all three games here. They came out not only did they win all three games, they blew their opponents for three games. And it was a really loud statement from them. They coming off two Omaha trips, that program is obviously very, very solid. But, there were questions coming into the year, having lost three starting pitchers plus a closer that in Riley Farrell was, one of the best closers in college baseball the last few years. And, so far it hasn't mattered for TCU. They've figured things out, and they had to figure things out on the fly a little bit last week when Mitchell Traver, who was supposed to start opening day, was injured. He's out for 4 to 6 weeks with a lat strain. But TCU, they're just humming right along, and it looks like a very, very good team again. And Luke and Baker was outstanding on Saturday night. He threw six shutout innings, and he hit a home run, and it was a mammoth home run. Schlossnagel, like you said, he's reloaded. There was no rebuilding year. There was just a reload.
The amazing thing to me, guys, and Mike, I'd like you to weigh in on this some too. I mean, Luke and Baker, the first time I saw him was a junior home run derby, hitting home runs. And I remember our former colleague Clint Longenecker talking about the power that Luke and Baker had, and Teddy's story from Saturday night, I guess it is. Maybe this is from Sunday, where he talked about how Luke and Baker, Jim Schlossnagel said if you'd asked the 30 teams, probably half liked him as a hitter and half liked him as a pitcher, and you saw why tonight. That's accurate. Just talking to the scouts I talked to about him coming out of high school, I tell you who he sounds a lot like, and this is probably putting a lot on him. He sounds like A.J. Reed. I know he's not a left-handed hitter like A.J. Reed, but he sounds like A.J. Reed, who was a Friday night guy in the SEC and led the country in home runs. I don't know. Is that too much of too lofty of a comparison?
No, I thought the same thing. And, it might be maybe a little too early to make that jump, just considering he's made two starts in his college career. But obviously there's a lot to like from what we've seen so far. I've had the same questions. Would I rather have him as a pitcher, or would I rather have him as a hitter? I mean, you look at him out on the mound, Jim Schoner tweeted over the weekend that you wouldn't want to get in a fight with him. You wouldn't want to charge the mound. And
he's a big boy.
He is a big boy. I mean, it's... there's just a lot. He doesn't look like a freshman is the thing with him. And obviously, you look at his two starts, not only has he thrown six scoreless innings in each start, he's homered in each start. So that's crazy. If he keeps up that pace, he was my preseason freshman of the year choice. Same thing for Jim. Right now it looks like he's sort of following in the path. You mentioned A.J. Reed, but it's kind of similar to what Brendan McKay was doing last year for Louisville too.
Call.
Yeah.
Great call, as Clint also would say.
So, obviously it's still early and a lot can happen, but it's a very promising start for him, and he has the stuff and obviously the power to keep it going.
So, Teddy, to me, TCU, we kind of thought they would have a star. We thought they would have this freshman star. We really did. Clearly half of us in the office, you and me being the other half, clearly half of us thought he could be freshman of the year. So we thought they'd have the star. It's really not a shock that he's doing what he's doing. But this is more than Luke and Baker. Who else kind of step forward for TCU, and who else caught your eye for them this weekend?
Well, before that, I just want to say A.J. Reed might be selling Luka Baker short.
Wow.
You know, I know the Mets drafted A.J. Reed as a pitcher out of high school, but, you know, he doesn't throw with the... I know he's left-handed, but he doesn't throw with Luka Baker's velocity, and Baker's already throwing. You know, he's commanding stuff well.
He's probably ahead.
Two starts,
I think you're right, though. He probably is a little ahead of where... A.J. Reed was. I think that's fair to say. By the way, Joe DeMeyer does have, my preseason freshman of the year pick, does have 10 strikeouts in 11 innings so far. So, come on, Joe, pick up the pace! And has not been allowed to hit yet by UW. They're focusing him on the mound. So, I was hoping he'd hit a little bit in his college career yet. I'll have to talk to coach out there and see what he thinks about hitting him so he can catch up to Luke and Baker here in the race. But, it does seem like, you know, one of the other reasons, I guess, that we liked TCU was, you know, last year's freshman class kind of coming back this year, what they could do as sophomores. It does seem like those guys, again, that supporting cast that Baker has is a pretty strong supporting cast.
It is. You know, Evan Skagg behind the plate, one of those sophomores, he's hitting three hole right in front of Baker, and he's off to a good start. And Brian Howard on Friday night, starting on the mound, he was very good for TCU. He's a junior, but they hadn't used him a ton the last 2 years because of the pitching depth that they had. But they really need him to step into a bigger role this year, and so far he's doing just that. And it looks like between him and Baker, and then this left-hander Rex Hill, a junior college transfer, that they'll be good on the mound again, which is what do you expect from TCU. Kirk Sarlous does a great job with their pitching staff there. But the lineup, Jim Schlossnagel said several times that, you know, this is the deepest lineup he's ever had, and they don't have Nolan Brown right now, who Schlossnagel thinks is maybe their most dynamic offensive player. So when he gets back from injury, it could be even better than what it is right now.
That's the impressive thing, is that they are off to this great start despite a lot of roster turnover, and they're not at full strength. One of their key hitters and one of their key pitchers, as you mentioned, in Traver, not available yet. The other thing that you wrote about down there, Teddy, and obviously, Mike, I want you to weigh in on this as well. Arkansas, very loud start for the Razorbacks. They jump into the rankings at number 17. So TCU jumps up the rankings from 17 to 9, and Arkansas takes their place at 17, as Houston and Louisiana Lafayette, Houston went 0-3 down there. Louisiana Lafayette 1-2. Those two teams dropped in our top 25 poll. Actually, I guess, yeah, Lafayette 16, Arkansas 17. The Razorbacks, I mean, I think that Michael Bernal, the shortstop, was one of the last guys I left off my top 50 senior list. Immediately regret this decision.
Yeah, Milk was a bad
jumping
choice.
In the bear pit, bad, leaving Michael Bernal off the top 50 seniors list. I believe I left him off. Also bad. Four home runs already for Michael Bernal. I mean, this guy's not going to be Andrew Benintendi Part 2, is he, Teddy? I mean, where's the power coming from for him? And I mean, I know that the Arkansas liked what they had coming back, especially up the middle of their lineup, of their defense, I should say. But was it 17 newcomers? The Dave Van Horn, again, a veteran coach who kind of seems like he's seamlessly transitioned from last year's team and brought in all these newcomers. And Arkansas hit the ground running.
Yeah, Bernal was the named most outstanding player of the tournament here, and he showed some real good power. I think it was three home runs here, and he said that he really worked over the off season to become a better power hitter. To me, it's impressive that Arkansas has this offense, because they did lose significant pieces from last year, especially Andrew Benintendi, the college player of the year. But they think, Coach Dave Van Horn thinks that this is a more balanced lineup than last year, and maybe a deeper one, that, you know, they don't have Benintendi, but that they can share the load better this year, that they're experienced enough that it's not going to have to be one guy that makes them go all the time. And, you know, obviously Benintendi had help last year, but when you lose a star like that, I think it is, people are going to wonder, you know, what who's going to fill the void. And Arkansas is not looking for one person. They're just looking to have a deep lineup and to put together quality at bats 1 through 9.
And, you know, Mike, we saw Arkansas last year in Omaha, and so much of the focus was on Benintendi, but also on Zach Jackson.
Right.
And there was this question about whether he would move into the rotation or whether he'd stay in the bullpen. Clearly, Dave Jorn, their pitching coach, and Coach Van Horn felt that, you know, they wanted him as that weapon out of the bullpen, and he is such a weapon. But that did mean they had to come up with other starting pitchers around Taccolini, who came on for them late last season. So they pitched pretty well this weekend as well. I mean, obviously, Teddy, you could weigh in here, but a lot of these pitchers that we are seeing for Arkansas, these were the guys who helped get them to Omaha last year. Clearly, Benintendi was the star and the guy who drove that team last year. But most of the pitching from last year's Omaha team is back for the Razorbacks this year.
Right. I mean, I think the most significant loss they had was Trey Killian.
Right.
Was the biggest loss. But other than that, most of the staff is intact. And obviously, I know, Teddy, you really like their pitching coming into this year, and you were a big Arkansas proponent as we were talking about a preseason rankings. And, yeah, you know, seeing Zach Jackson pitch this weekend, obviously I wasn't there, but watching him on TV.
He jumps out.
He does jump out, and seeing him in Omaha last year, too, in an SEC tournament, I mean, I think he can make the kind of impact that Josh Spores did for Virginia a year ago. You know, how important Josh Spores was in Omaha.
Nice.
and all that.
When Virginia needed him, last year in the ACC tournament, Virginia was in the play-in game. Mm-hmm. And they had to win one, and they started Josh Spores. It does seem like Zach Jackson is the kind of guy you don't want him to start week in, week out. You'd like him to affect two games on a weekend, not one. But if you need him, I like that comp to Josh to Spores. I mean, similar high effort delivery. Similar ridiculously unhittable breaking ball, probably throws a little bit harder maybe than Spores, although I saw Spores up to 97 last year. I like that comp. You're 2 for 2, Mike. Keep it up. That's good. And Teddy, Mike's talking about Zach Jackson. Obviously, they made the decision to leave him in the bullpen. That must mean they had faith in their starting pitching. From what you saw this weekend, was that faith well-founded for the Arkansas Razorbacks?
Well, Taccolini was really good on Friday night. And then they got a couple of short outings from their next two guys, and we'll see where they go from here. And the pitching, like Mike mentioned, I was not concerned too much about it. You know, in the preseason, I thought that was the strength of this team. And Keen McKinney yesterday did not get out of the first inning. He just wasn't commanding his stuff. But if he can get back to what he's capable of doing, then that's a really good guy, to have on a Sunday. And the Arkansas had a lot of arms to throw out from the bullpen. They used 7 guys in back-to-back days, I believe. And, you know, they were all pretty good out of the bullpen. So, you know, if Arkansas has to string it together a little bit while some guys get back to full health, get going 100% again, then it seems like they'll be capable of doing that. And again, Jackson is a difference maker, and the way they use him, you know, he went 3 innings on Friday night, and he was ready to come in on Sunday if they needed him. So, you know, he can affect the...
Nice. Our first ringtone of the year, I believe, in a podcast. Outstanding.
It's from Arkansas.
Very good. Maybe it was Graham Jordan who did ask us on Twitter if we could talk about the thoughts on the Arkansas team after their hot start, which we've given, but thank you to Graham for the tweet. But continue.
Yeah, so Jackson, you know, can affect multiple games in a weekend, and he didn't get a chance to this weekend. I didn't need it, but it's there as a possibility, and you're going to see it throughout the season, I'm sure.
He is he's good. He's a great weapon to have there in the background. It's the Baseball America College podcast with Ted Cahill and Mike Lanana. Jim Schoner is going to join us after we take a break in a minute, but I did want to talk about the other big riser up this week's rankings. Teddy, obviously you weren't here. You're down in Houston, but Mike wound up going to all 3 Oklahoma State and North Carolina games, 2 top 25 teams. And as is often the case, Mike's Vine game was on this weekend. And who knew that you would Vine 3 game-winning hits in a row, but 3 straight walk-offs, it was like better than the Catalina wine mixer, for crying out loud, for North Carolina. Obviously, Teddy, you're down in Houston, so you weren't here in the Triangle area for this, but Mike was, and just the way the series went, Mike, you're going to go see North Carolina and Oklahoma State anyway because it's 2 top 25 teams, it's our backyard. Mm-hmm. But you wind up seeing something that I've never seen, 3 straight games, entire college 3-game series, where one team walks off the other one all 3 times, And Teddy, I don't remember, did you have Carolina in your preseason top 25, or were you a little hesitant on the Tar Heels?
No, I'm the one that wanted them.
Okay, you're the one that wanted them. Yeah. We were almost too familiar. We did not want them, and now we've got them, whether we want them or not. They're at number 12. Back-to-back series wins, Mike, and just, I mean, you were there. The vibe around this team last year was listless. I mean, that's a fair word to use for the 2015 Tar Heels. That is not a fair word to use this year, it seems like.
I would agree, yeah. The culture last year, just it just felt off. It's just the mood around the team. There's just something about it. It just, I don't know. It was just off. And obviously the mood this year is already dramatically different. The clubhouse is loose. Everyone's excited, and it helps when you're winning. I mean, you open the season at UCLA, and you take 2 out of 3, and then, you know, the 3 walk-offs this weekend. I mean, you can't ask for something like that. You know, no one could have seen that coming. But, you know, it does say a lot about the character of this UNC club. It's a young team, and, you know, the reason that I think you and I were on the fence about them coming in is just because of how much they lost on the offensive side with,
right,
you know, a few transfers out and graduation and all of that. I mean, there's no question it's a young lineup, and there are a lot of questions coming into the year. But so far, they've responded well. You know, Kyle Datras is batting in the 3-hole, playing second base, a freshman. He had the walk-off hit Friday night.
They're not asking as much of him as TCU asks of Luke and Baker, but this is another freshman off to a great start, because they are asking him to, from day one, play second base, bat 3-hole, be our energy guy, really. And he's living up to those expectations. I know just some of the scouts I talked to after Carolina's first weekend and going into this weekend, just guys in this area were like, yeah, Kyle Datras is legit. He's a really good player. I don't know if he should be the 3-hole hitter from day one. So far, he's answering those questions pretty well, because Oklahoma State and UCLA, those are two teams that, whatever
pitch.
You can say, they have arms. Exactly. Yeah. They have a variety of arms, different kind of pitchers, power guys, sinker slider guys. It seems like he's been very comfortable in that 3-hole, right, Mike?
Yeah, he's been, you know, I don't see any reason to move him from that 3-hole. I don't know who else you would put there at this point. You know, he's been very good, and they also really like the freshman catcher that they have, Cody Roberts. He's started all 6 games for them so far. He's shown a good arm, and he's hit well at the plate. He walks up to a Dr. Dre song. I like that part of it. You know, it's been, you know, the freshmen have contributed so far, and they've also, I think just as importantly, as some sophomores have stepped up for him. Logan Warmoth is batting in the 5th hole, and they need protection there for Tyler Ramirez. You know, Tyler Ramirez is going to be the guy that people circle in that lineup,
right,
in a cleanup spot, so they need protection. And Logan Warmoth so far has stepped up and not hitting for a lot of power, but he's making contact. He's you know, connecting with the ball. So, you know, he's been good, and they've obviously, you know, gotten situational hitting, you know, down to a science at this point. You know, laying down a bunt yesterday, Sunday, Cody Roberts laid it down, moved it to 2nd and 3rd, and that set up the game-winning hit by Eli Sutherland, a senior who's,
right,
who's one of those guys, a clubhouse guy, keeps his head down, and who everyone roots for. So I think the one thing that really stands out for Carolina more than anything is their pitching. You know, they have the arms. Everyone on that staff throws 90-plus. And the bullpen this weekend, I think, made the biggest difference, just because A.J. Bogucki, Hunter Williams, those guys threw all 3 games. They didn't give up a run any of those games. And Hanson Butler, their closer, he's a sophomore, but he's legit. Throws straight over the top, 92, touching 94, really a hammer of a breaking ball. He was filthy this weekend. So they really have a lot of options in that bullpen, and obviously it was... There are a lot of noises going on.
We got a lot of crap going
right
on
now,
here.
But
that's okay. Keep going.
Yeah, but no, it was impressive. It was definitely an impressive showing.
And it's all new pieces to the bullpen. It's not, you know, the guys who were there last year, who pitched every close game, are gone in Kelly and Trent Thornton. And we've got Teddy back now. But yeah, pretty impressive for North Carolina to sweep. Guys, just your impressions of Oklahoma State. I mean, Mike, if you, well, you know, what you saw, but also Teddy, what you think a sweep, you know, like this means for Oklahoma State. I mean, you lose 3 straight games by a run like that. That can't be easy to come back from. Just Mike, if you could go first, just what you thought of, what was your impression of that club, Josh Holliday's club, have the talent to bounce back from this?
Yeah, I think they definitely have the talent. I mean, they were in every game, obviously, you know, just because they went down to the wire. You know, it's just, The challenge with them at this point is just the psyche of it, just because they've lost 4 straight walk-off games, actually, going back to the game before Carolina was also a walk-off loss.
Gee, mama.
And all 5 of their losses this year have been 1-run losses. So it's really for them, and I talked to Josh Holliday before the series, and he said we just need to improve our situational hitting. And obviously those words rang true throughout the weekend, as you know, they weren't able to seal the deal. But I do really like their team. They've got a veteran club. They got some bats in that lineup. Donnie Walton was really impressive, a senior shortstop. I'm working on a story on him. Stay tuned for that on baseballamerica.com. But he, you know, he made some smooth plays out at shortstop. He's a smooth defender, and you know, he's a switch hitter and a guy who can impact the baseball. I mean, he hit a monster shot, you know, in the first inning yesterday. You know, and that's the thing. You know, the last two games of that series, they jumped ahead early, big in the first inning, 2-run home run yesterday. The day before, grand slam.
Yeah, crooked Williams. Numbers both times.
Yeah, so it's just been finishing. They just need to learn how to finish.
And Teddy, for me, the takeaway from the weekend is we jumped TCU up, way up high, and Oklahoma State in the Big 12 falls to 22. And you know, kind of a iffy year for the Big 12 last year. You know, you have Texas splitting at home with Stanford this past weekend. Texas Tech looked good out in Houston. I just want to kind of, what your take? Can Oklahoma State come back from this and still compete for first place in the Big 12, or do you feel like TCU is now the favorite in that conference?
You know, that's tough. TCU, I guess maybe should be the favorite again. They have the experience of winning, and they're definitely playing way better right now. But you know, every coach knows that it's only February. You know, for one more day, it's only February, and yeah, there's just so much baseball left to be played, and they won't even play conference games for another few weeks. But Oklahoma State's a veteran club, so you know, I definitely expect them to bounce back. They haven't played a home game yet, even.
Right.
Their home opener is tomorrow against Incarnate Word. You know, so when they get back home, and they'll be there for a few weeks now, you know, they should be able to get things going in the right direction and get help, you know, get right before they start the Big 12. You know, slate. TCU, though, those two schools and maybe Texas and Texas Tech are you know, they should all be pretty competitive right at the top of the conference, I would think.
And Oklahoma was in our preseason top 25. We dropped them out of the rankings this week. So we did have a question on the Twitter machine before I get to our ad. Excuse me, from @collegefan03. I'll let you guys take this, and then we'll take a quick break. Is Alec Hansen this year's version of Michael Mattiuella? Same injury flags? Excited to see his form in L.A. at Dodger Classic. Obviously, not the same injury flags. You know, he doesn't have a difficult-to-pronounce back condition that I don't recall for Michael Mattiuella. And then Mattiuella had Tommy John. So, you know, not the same yet. But Alec Hansen does have a long history of, you know, his high school senior year. You can go on baseballamerica.com and put Alec Hansen in the search engine, and you come up with Connor Glassy's write-up of when Alec Hansen was shut down with forearm strain before the draft out of high school in Colorado. And I will note, I love the Colorado High School baseball phylum of pitchers, but that phylum had a rough year in 2015. Guys like Marco Gonzalez and Kyle Freeland, who took steps back. I still like Kyle Freeland, I still like Marco Gonzalez, but those guys took steps back, and Alec Hansen, you know, people, I've talked to scouting directors, they like that phylum too. I didn't come up with this on my own. I got it from those jokers. But there's caution on Alec Hansen. And Teddy, obviously, in the first week, he was not very good. You're headed out to L.A. What can you tell College Fan 03 to look for with Alec Hansen?
I don't know what to say with him exactly right now. He was so bad in that first outing. The stuff was all there. He just didn't know where it was going, apparently. It was a bit better this weekend, but you know, they need to get him going, because you know, the reason why we liked them coming into the season was, you know, Jake Elliott and Alec Hansen were supposed to be this really good 1-2 punch at the top of a rotation that gives you a chance to win every weekend, and they haven't been that so far. Oklahoma's lost both Friday night games, and they really need to get those guys going if they're going to get going, because it's a bit of a younger offense. So with Alec Hansen, I don't know. You know, everyone's going to be interested to see. I imagine there will be a lot of scouts there to watch it, and you know, they're trying to figure this out just like everyone else is right now, I think.
Yeah, you don't want to see a stat line of two starts, four innings, four hits, seven walks, six strikeouts, a wild pitch and a hit batter.
It's not ideal.
It's not what you're looking for. Is Austin Hansen his younger brother?
No.
Same name, brother from another mother. He's pitched well. Austin Hansen's pitched well. Alec Hansen, not so much. Sooners 3-5 as they head out to Dodgertown. Guys, if you're headed out to Dodgertown as a fan, or if you're headed to any other college baseball event, or of course, March starts tomorrow, you're headed out to the postseason for college basketball. If you've been frustrated trying to buy tickets online, most sites make it complicated and they try to sneak in huge fees at the checkout. That's why you need to try SeatGeek. They have made it easier than ever to buy and sell sports and concert tickets. So SeatGeek has taken all the work and the hassle basically out of shopping for tickets. It's basically a search engine for tickets. They put all the tickets available on other sites into one place so you save time and never miss a deal. You can even set alerts for upcoming games, and SeatGeek will let you know if and when ticket prices fall. Even better, every ticket on SeatGeek is given a grade based on value, so you can immediately find underpriced seats. Before you buy, you can use SeatGeek's detailed maps to see the view from your seat. I'm guessing, Mike, after a few years working with Baseball America, those grades are going to be on a 2080 scouting scale for your SeatGeek seat grades. Best of all, SeatGeek is always honest and upfront about the price. Unlike StubHub, SeatGeek shows you the full ticket price from the start to finish and never surprises you with huge fees at checkout. Baseball America podcast listeners get a $20 rebate off their first SeatGeek purchase. Here's how you get that $20 rebate on tickets. Download the free SeatGeek app. Go to the settings tab and click add a promo code. Enter the promo code BA20. That's the letter B, the letter A, and the numbers 20. And then SeatGeek will send you $20 after you've made your first ticket purchase. Download the free SeatGeek app and enter your promo code BA20 today. And we welcome SeatGeek aboard as the sponsor of Baseball America Podcasts. Guys, we're going to go ahead and bring Jim Schoenert in, wrap up the podcast, talking a little Tony Gwynn classic. Back here on the Baseball America College Podcast, joined now by Jim Schoenert as well. But guys, we also had a little movement at the top of the rankings. We want to wrap up with two things. Florida's still at number one. Miami's still at number six. It's as if that series never happened. But kind of basically we left those teams as they were because the series kind of happened as expected. Florida goes down to Coral Gables, wins 2 of 3, but Miami did not get swept by the Gators. And then we have Louisville going to Ole Miss. So another ACC, this time the ACC team goes on the road at the SEC team, and the SEC team wins that series as well. As Ole Miss wins the series at home, we jump the Rebels up to 13th. Guys, I guess my takeaway from that Florida-Miami series, and Jimmy, you can weigh in on this if you want to, or obviously Teddy, it's quite the luxury to have when you have two preseason All-Americans in A.J. Puck and Logan Schorr, but your best starter might be the Sunday guy in Alex Fado. If Alex Fado is going to go 92-94, touching sevens a lot and pitching in that 92-97 range, I mean, come on, man. That's ridiculous. I mean, Dane Dunning would start for a lot of teams. Jackson Kowar would start for a lot of teams. Florida's pitching is ridiculous. And Alex Fado, I mean, Jimmer, is there anybody who's got a Sunday starter like him in the country?
Can't be very many. I mean, we've talked about, they've got the possible number one pick going on Saturdays.
A luxury.
Now with Fado, I mean, we saw Fado in Omaha last year. I think he beat Miami there, if I remember right, Mike. But I remember he did pitch well. Or maybe it was Virginia. Whatever game he started, he pitched well as a freshman with their season on the line. And now, obviously, he goes on the road in a rubber game, top 10 series, and goes out and throws a no-hitter into the seventh. I mean, that's pretty big time.
I mean, Teddy, what was your takeaway from that series down in Coral Gables? I mean, obviously, Miami, it seems like Miami competed well, played well, had good crowds. Florida's just really, really good.
Yeah, I mean, I think that is the takeaway, is that Florida is dominant. When I talked to Coach O'Sullivan yesterday after the game, he said that was the best Fado had pitched in a Florida uniform. So to get that in that environment, that's only a good sign for the rest of the year for the Gators.
Of course, at this time, his dad, Lenny, was a big leaguer already. He got to the big leagues as a 20-year-old. Was out of pro ball by age 26, was a first-round pick of the Twins. So a lot to live up to in the family, but so far, Fado, he's pretty good. That's all I know is he's really good, and Florida is really good. I don't think our opinion has changed necessarily on Louisville. I think we still think Louisville's really good, generally.
It did kind of strike me that, I mean, it's not the end of the world, but the ACC did kind of get a little bit of a bloody nose this weekend with those two series and Virginia losing at home to the Pirates. But, I mean, obviously, you know, North Carolina is a pleasant story, a pleasant surprise. NC State kind of took a nice little series from Wright State. You know, Florida State, same thing with College of Charleston. But, you know, the top of the league, a little bit of a, like I said, a little bit of a bloody nose weekend.
I think that's fair. That's a fair way to put it. NC State, a game that we both went Friday, saw them lose to Wright State. They kind of rallied. But both those teams, Louisville and NC State, one thing in common this weekend, not so good on Friday. Kyle Funkhauser, not good on Friday. I mean, Louisville has the luxury of pitching Brendan McKay on Saturday. But if Kyle Funkhauser, I mean, you have a million ways to talk about his funk. But he started, his start this week was too similar to the ones from last year. Even coming into last year when he was started the year as the number one college arm on the board, he was still doing that with a 4.5 walks per nine average in his first two seasons. So these bouts of wildness, this is not out of character for Kyle Funkhauser. In some way, that's a feature, not a bug. So that's concerning for me for Louisville. That's the longer-term concern. I still like their pitching depth. I still think Kyle Funkhauser is a really good prospect and going to be a good college pitcher this year. But confidence can be shaken very easily when you're 22 years old. So that's what I'm worried about for him.
Well, right now, through 8 2/3 innings, he has 11 walks. 10 hits.
That's not what you want.
So it's not, you know, I think obviously you look at his track record, and I mean, control issues have been a problem in the past, but he's been able to work through them. And he's, you know, he has an excellent track record as far as pitching for USA and Cape Cod and just everything that he's done,
right?
You know, with Louisville. You know, he got off to a little bit of a rough start last year, too. I think his first start and opening day was good, but then he had a couple of rough outings after that and was able to pick up the pieces. So I feel like it'll be a similar trajectory for him, but. You know, you wonder, you know, you look at the mental side of things, too. You know, him deciding to come back and spurning the draft and all of that. And,
right.
You know, you wonder after these first two starts if that's weighing on him at all. You know, there's a lot at play with him there. And, you know, I wonder if things keep going in this direction. You know, Brendan McKay is the complete opposite. He hasn't allowed a run yet in 14 innings. And
He's
only walked four. You know, you wonder if maybe at some point they slide him to the Friday role and maybe take a little pressure off of Funkhauser.
And it's obviously complicated, guys. We talked about Luke and Baker. It's complicated when you have a two-way guy. What's the best time to use him? And Dan McDonald's had this before. He was an assistant. I mean, he made the comp to you last year, Mike, I'm pretty sure, about Stephen Head when he was at Ole Miss.
Yeah.
Of course, the reunion this weekend, he was at Ole Miss when they had Stephen Head, Seth Smith, all those guys in the middle part of last decade, about 10 years ago, 11 years ago, in Ole Miss. So like every year, they were a super regional team. They'd have a crazy crowd at Swayze, and they'd lose the super regional at home. The Brian Petway, those kind of teams. You know, they had some great teams. Couldn't quite get over the hump. Louisville has gotten over the hump to Omaha. Couldn't quite get over it last year. That's going to be a challenge for them. It feels like they like using McKay on Saturdays. They wound up doing that a lot last year.
I don't know if they're one of those that fall into the. They like to. If they're one of the programs likes to do the right, left, right.
Yeah,
in their rotation, because I know I was thinking about this the other day, how with NC State, where they keep Brian Brown on Saturdays, even though he's their best guy, they kept Carlos Rodon on Saturday. I think his second year, a lot of his career, he was on Saturdays. And I just wonder if
Louisville
is in that same
mold.
Yeah,
they do have Drew Harrington starting Sundays, though, a left-hander, could split the lefties with Funkhauser.
True.
In the middle, if they stick with Harrington. I mean, they have some options there for that Sunday spot as well. They have Cade McClure, who pitched really well in the fall.
And I'm Cade McClure.
It had a solid midweek start, and, you know, they have Anthony Kidston, who's a veteran, who, you know, so
former rotation stalwart there.
Yeah, he was their Saturday starter, and he's, you know, he's only thrown two innings this year, but they were a solid two innings, five strikeouts, one hit, so, you know.
That's one. I think Louisville has a better chance of figuring that out than NC State. We'll wrap up on the ACC real quick, Jimmer, but that was odd. Wolfpack got pounded on Friday and used basically their midweek starting approach, but they did kind of bounce back over the weekend. And I'll say this, Wright State looked like a regional team to me. That's a very physical bunch. I was very impressed with Wright State. Obviously, the ball was flying out Saturday. There were six home runs, a lot of wind blowing out. What was your impression of Wright State as one of these mid-majors? I mean, Vince Lara wrote about them last year in the regional. Jesse Schulten certainly looked the part of a legit ACC weekend guy to me on Friday. I have to imagine that plays very well in the Horizon League, but how did NC State bounce back the rest of the weekend?
Yeah, it was funny. After the I wasn't there Saturday, but I went there yesterday, and after the game, Elliot Aben, the Wolfpack's head coach, was like, yeah, scheduling them was a mistake. So, I mean, but hey, as long as you win the series, it'll look good. But yeah, I mean, that was, they had their hands full. I think once they kind of, you know, like kind of like you were saying, they treated that Friday game almost like a midweek game, because they did have a midweek game get rained out, so they kind of just stuck with what they were going to do for that game. But, and yeah, I mean, they've kind of talking to people around there, they've got all these five-game weeks early in the season. They've got two more midweek games scheduled this week, so they're kind of doing that to sort out all these, this pitching, figure out who they want on the weekends when conference play starts. But yeah, that kind of, it did work against them on Friday. And yeah, well, I mean, Joe O'Donnell was okay on Sunday. Obviously, probably the big thing is that Brian Brown looked like he threw pretty well on Saturday.
Yeah, he's crucial for what NC State wants to do.
He got hit hard by Coastal on their in his first start. So if he's on track, then that's a big step. But yeah, overall, I mean, the offense is kind of humming along. I mean, they got their opener, they got shut out by Old Dominion, but I think they've scored at least 6-7 runs every game since then. So that's kind of been what we thought.
Well, it was pretty neat to see college baseball in being started again. Pretty neat to see the tournament that started out in San Diego, the Tony Gwynn Classic. I mean, we've had, they've had, and I like the way that Kurt Kenny put it, you know, people don't think of, you think of college baseball attendance, and you usually think of the Southeastern Conference, or you think of, you know, some of these one-off games like Tulane and LSU used to play every year in the Superdome, or you think about Georgia and Georgia Tech play at Turner Field, or some of those kind of things, some of the conference tournaments. Obviously, you think of Omaha. But the single game record for attendance is the 40,000 fans at Petco when it opened in 2004. Side draft note, that was the one where, that was the Matt Bush draft, which became the Matt Bush draft. But that was one where the Padres had Long Beach State open the ballpark. You know, San Diego State played Houston, and then Long Beach State played that night. And I forget who Jared Weaver pitched against, but he straight shoved. I mean, Jared Weaver's junior year, he had like 20 walks and 213 strikeouts, something sick like that. I just remember arguing with Will Kimmy all year about who'd be better, Mark Pryor or Jared Weaver. Will Kimmy won that one. Don't hate admitting when I lost. I lost that one badly. But, and then after that weekend, it was just Padres general manager Kevin Towers was there, and he was like, oh yeah, Jared Weaver was great. We're definitely looking at him with the number one overall pick. I mean, there was no subterfuge there with with Kevin Towers, who ultimately told ownership, no, he wants $6 or $8 million, he's probably not worth that. Of course he was worth it, especially if you're going to give Matt Bush 3.15, but I digress. Anyway, the point is, San Diego has a history with college baseball tournaments. They brought this one back in honor of the late Tony Gwynn. Arizona, Bryant, Kentucky, Nebraska, Tulane, UC Santa Barbara, and they actually played an actual tournament, along with that's the two host part. Teams. That's you. Do any of you guys remember? This is the first one I can remember.
I can't think of anything else like that.
It's not just you get your three games in and it's a round robin, everybody plays. They actually did an actual tournament, and UC Santa Barbara won the whole dadgum thing, I suppose. You talked to Andrew Checkitz last week, Jibber. What was the Gauchos coach's question going into the weekend, and kind of what questions were answered for him this weekend in San Diego?
Well, I mean, certainly the kind of the question going into the year was just how much pitching depth they would have. I mean, obviously Dylan Tate, Justin Hockamy, those guys are gone. Dominic Mazza was another guy that was good for them last year. He was gone. So, I mean, pitching was kind of a much different. These aren't last year's Gauchos. You kind of have to redefine how you think of them. I mean, they're a much more physical offensive team now. And they're kind of looking for guys in the mound other than Shane Bieber, who did.
Unfortunately named.
Yes, unfortunately.
Bad time to be a Bieber.
But he threw well both his first two starts. He beat Kentucky on Friday in their first round game, and you know, but they've been scoring runs. I mean, kind of like saying they're a much more physical team. I mean, Michael McAdoo, a freshman they have, not to be confused with the former Tar Heel basketball player, but
current Warriors, non-stalwart.
Yeah.
Current Warriors bench joker.
But he's a physical freshman in the outfield who's been good for him. Got a few other guys. Ryan Clark, their third baseman, has been really good. Clay Fisher, their shortstop, who was kind of they thought would be a more of a defensive ace, but he's out there hitting 320. So, I mean, they're scoring runs. I mean, they do still have Andrew Kalika, their leadoff guy, who's a kind of one of the few familiar names there. But I mean,
Cape batting champ. Good place to start. Mm-hmm. You know, a solid senior like that. But mm-hmm. it is surprising to hear a Big West coach say we're going to be built around offense.
He talked about that, like when he's like, you know, I don't know when we get into conference play and we have to go to Long Beach and all this kind of stuff, how it's going to play for us. But we are we are a more offensive team now. That's going to be what we are.
That is, that's a different pace for that league, for sure. And we'll see if that can be kept up by UC Santa Barbara. Teddy's back now on this patchy connection. But Teddy, what was your takeaway from the Gwynn Classic? Any teams that really jump out at you out there? Because for me, what stands out is, I guess, well, Kentucky 1-2. That's a wonderful sound.
San Diego State's struggling, too.
San Diego State's off to a poor start hosting the event.
Or something.
Yeah, Kentucky go 1-2 out there, Teddy. Anything else from the Gwynn Classic stand out to you? Any takeaways that jumped out while you were in Houston and watching San Diego from afar?
Yeah, I mean, I was impressed by what UCSB did, and now they've got a series going to Oregon where Andrew Checkins was hired from. So, you know, they're an interesting team to watch. Kentucky was a little disappointed with their pitching, I would think. Kyle Cody and Zach Brown bookended the weekend with subpar starts, and Kentucky's thing this year is going to be their pitching staff. That's why we like them coming into the year. So they need to get those two guys going here. But they're another team that hasn't been home yet. They go home this weekend, like Oklahoma State that I mentioned 20 minutes ago now probably. But you know, when Kentucky goes home, maybe they can get those guys going and figure some things out, because yeah, the Wildcats are still a pretty good team. It just was not the best weekend for them out on the West Coast.
Just on the West Coast tip before we wrap up. So you have Santa Barbara playing really well. Fullerton bounces back this weekend from their opening series loss to get that to 4-2. Irvine's off to a decent start. Cal Poly's off to a good start. And then Long Beach State beating Arizona State 2 out of 3. I mean, I know Arizona State's in a little bit of a rebuild mode right now, but that was impressive to me. You know, Irvine, I know they split their first weekend with San Jose State. They swept Nevada. Certainly Nevada's in some rebuild. But so far, the Big West always has that chip on its shoulder. To me, Long Beach State's really the team I'm really interested in. Long Beach State. Matheson, who's their Friday guy, I know they think highly of him. I know Troy Buckley's kind of been trying to rebuild things. I guess Matheson actually goes on Saturdays. But so far, so good. They won a midweek against UCLA this week. They're going to play low-scoring games, and you play low-scoring games, you're going to have less margin for error, so you're going to drop a game to Holy Cross every once in a while. You could lose some of those, but they have a non-conference schedule, guys. I know they play the Holy Cross, but they have Arizona State that just beat, Nebraska next week at home, at Oklahoma. I know they also play Columbia. But three of those five non-conference series are pretty stout, especially on paper. I wonder if that's really going to help Long Beach RPI-wise late in the year as an at-large team if they can't win the Big West. So to me, we talked about the ACC a little bit before, a fairly auspicious beginning for the Big West. Any last takeaways from you guys? Teddy, anything else you wanted to throw in this podcast that has gone too long and you need to clear out of your hotel room?
I just think it was a good weekend all around college baseball. You know, you have these early season tournaments, but you also have teams going on the road, like Florida and Louisville and Oklahoma State. You know, teams that don't have to necessarily.
Yeah, good schedules.
It was good for these teams to get out and to play away from home and see where you are early in the season. It's only February, but you know, like Coach Mike Bianco said to me yesterday, you know, it is what it is, but what it is where you are right now. And so I think a lot of teams learned something about themselves this weekend, and you know, it would be great to see how they approach the improvements that they found out they need to make or adjustments over the next couple months.
And you can see more and read more about Mike Bianco and his Ole Miss club in today's Off the Bat that Teddy Cahill has already posted at baseballamerica.com if you haven't seen it already. Mike, what are you looking ahead to? And are you going to be at this LeClaire Classic next weekend for the Pirate Buffet in East Carolina? It's famed in the fortune in local sports writer lore that they Malcolm Gray and the ECU sports information folks at the LeClaire ballpark. Take care of the media there, the LeClaire Classic. But a good tournament coming to East Carolina this weekend with Southeastern Louisiana, Maryland, Tennessee. I'm hoping to get there for see Nick Senzel, since his name rhymes with Denzel. I'm excited about him.
Yeah, no, I'm definitely excited for the food options in the press box. I think, you know, that's really the biggest reason why I'm going. But I also really want to see Mike Schwerin in action for Maryland. That's the guy that I really want to see. I haven't gotten a close look, in-person look at him yet. So
I got a scouting report on Mike Schwerin this weekend, and yeah. The short version that I remember from the text is the changeup has advanced significantly. The fastball is crisp. He dominated Rhode Island. I mean, it's Rhode Island. The 8 innings, one hit.
Yeah.
He was very, very sharp. He was much better than the D.C. area traffic, according to the scouts I talked to, who were grumbling in D.C. traffic and had time to text because they were stuck in their car, not moving after the game. So,
yeah.
But Mike
probably
Schwerin,
never been to Maryland before. It's probably the reason, at least before last year, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, whoever had to go, since Eric Milton, maybe Justin Maxwell brought you out a few years past, but you probably wouldn't go see him on the road. But Schwerin and Senzel, a couple of first rounders, will be on display this weekend. And Jim, any last takeaways for you?
Well, I mean, certainly you guys stole my thunder there with the LeClaire. You know I can't miss a chance to see the Terps. But
that's right.
I am looking forward to that. Be there at least a couple of those days.
We have South Carolina and Clemson. I mean, usually that's the hallmark of the weekend, usually.
I know you guys talked about TCU, but I'll throw in my tip of the cap to how good they looked this weekend from what I watched. I think that's probably the main things. I was looking forward to the LeClaire. Irish Classic is here this weekend with Alabama coming in, who's off to a good start. So I think that's Clemson, South Carolina will be fun. Yeah, and then see out in LA, that would be a great tournament. But yeah,
I'm excited about sun.
Week.
I'm excited about good weather. We've had good weather. We haven't had a weekend yet in college baseball. Knock on fake wood here, but we haven't had a weekend yet where it's been like, oh, games are canceled, didn't play, rescheduled, we'll make it up. So the more games we get in, the better. I encourage you to use your SeatGeek app, to download the SeatGeek app, use the Baseball America promo code BA20. And thanks again to SeatGeek for coming aboard as a podcast sponsor. And use it, get out and watch some college baseball and whatever. And of course, spring training with games getting ready to start. I believe that includes college exhibitions as well. So,
BC and the Red Sox.
That's
right.
Undefeated BC.
A lot of those get started. I think Florida Atlantic also playing St. Louis Cardinals either today or tomorrow. Mm-hmm. So
West Virginia and the D-backs.
West Virginia and the D-backs, a natural rivalry. That one makes all kinds of sense. Well done, Randy Mazin, to get that one on the schedule. So for our whole crew here, Mike Ladana, Jim Schoner, and Teddy Cahill, I am John Manuel. We'll see you on the next Baseball America podcast. So long, everybody.